This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Are we ready to do it?
Yeah.
It's a question. Are we ready to do it? Are we ready to start off and hear, kick off the off season with what's going to be the biggest single conversation? Are we ready to talk about Russell Wilson's contract? Whether or not he's going to become the first $35 million quarterback? Exactly. Are we ready to do it? Are you ready to begin this discussion in earnest, Dave?
Sure.
You want to do it? Because once we open this can of worms.
You know what? Listen, we're going to probably do it four or five times, so we might as well get started off early. Right? I just think it's the best time to talk about it if you're Russell Wilson. You're coming off the season that he had. I've never been more impressed. So, and I've never been more convinced that. And I kind of went through a phase this year where, you know, watching him and calling the games, and it really, honestly, it was the Green Bay game where, and I said this before, but I just felt like he had so many bad plays and that he was able to bring himself back from that game and actually finish it off and have a winning performance. But, you know, the thing that you look at his passer rating. So, yeah, Drew Brees, 115, 116. Mahomes was 113. You know, but if you look at accredited passers, you know, that aren't Kyle Allen and Mike Glennon, Russell Wilson's number three. He's 111 passer rating, and that's having thrown the ball the least in the NFL of any of these quarterbacks. And, you know, if you go and look at team stats, they're dead last. It's 26.7, I think, that they throw the ball, or eight. And there's nobody that gets more opportunities, yet all year long he was third in touchdowns and third in interceptions. So, I mean, I don't – where are you going to go? Why would you not, you know, do that contract? I don't know. Maybe if you think in the draft there's a Patrick Mahomes. But other than that, I mean – I know this as a talk show radio host. I don't want to talk about quarterback again. Remember when we were wandering around in the days of D-Jack and
as a fan, you
touchdown
don't,
Jesus,
yeah,
or interception Jesus.
As a fan, you don't want to be wandering around in that wilderness. I think almost everybody feels like you do, Dave. That this year was a year that, after that, and after watching them win 10 games, that there's no doubt about Russell Wilson's quality or anything. I think it's a matter of strategy now. If you're the Seahawks, how would you play this negotiation? Would you try to get it done right now? Would you try to get it done coming off of that season? Would you go and say, how much is it going to take?
I think you should have Pete go to him and say, we're going to talk about your contract in earnest. Because Pete talked about that with Frank Clark and say, you know, maybe whether you get something done, you know, going into the season. Here's the other thing, too. You've got the guys out of here that don't feel like he should be paid. And that's not going to rankle anybody or ruffle any feathers or anything like that because, look, he's a quarterback. And I don't know why that ever did anyway. But, you know, as far as how the money and the credit is distributed on this team, there were some ill feelings about that. And I think that those guys are gone.
How would you handle it, Jim?
You see what the 509 texted in here?
What did they say?
Coors Light text line over there. At the end of Danny's question, are we ready to discuss Russell Wilson's contract? Yakima went to a test of the emergency broadcast system.
I knocked
so
him
maybe
off the
not
air.
East of the mountains.
I knocked him off the air. How do you handle it if you're the Seahawks?
Boy, I just... You know, I'd be willing to let him play it out, especially if he's... To me, it's always if he wants the moon, give it to him. But I don't know if the Seahawks are going to want to go to $35 million. Joel Corey for CBSSports.com, former agent, he wrote a story about it last week and all the different details and everything that's in play here. And you can certainly make a case that he's going to be the highest paid quarterback. Aaron Rodgers currently with the highest annual salary, $33.5 million. So that's why we're talking about $35 million. But, boy, there's going to be a lot of give and take. And Mark Rogers, his agent, not sure if he's going to be so easy to negotiate with on this one because I think Russell stands to, boy, it's going to be a huge deal. It might be even closer to $40 million by the time we get to the summertime.
It's going to be interesting, and I think this is going to tell us some about what Russell wants and what the team wants because there's really no immediate deadline. This could go all the way till August. I expect it to get done in August at the soonest. If Russell is seeking to maximize the amount of money he makes, if he's seeking the absolute maximum, he's going to be looking years down the road to try to create a leverage point where the Seahawks might face the decision of letting him leave in the same way that Kirk Cousins did. But that would require not only playing out the final year of his contract next year, it would probably require playing at least 1 year on the franchise tag before he was able to create that kind of leverage. On the flip side from the Seahawks, if they want to create a situation, if they want to eliminate the uncertainty about him, they would press to have a deal done now. And I think it's just going to depend on what both sides want. What the upside? It's security versus maximizing your earning potential. And I think that's going to be a really interesting decision for both sides to make here of how much does Seattle want to eliminate the uncertainty going forward and how much does Russell want to maximize exactly what he's going to earn from the Seattle Seahawks.
I think it's going to require, it's going to require Russell being a little bit charitable because, look, I mean, if you're Mark Rogers, you're going to sit there and just give everything that I just gave. I mean, he had the same number of touchdowns and interceptions, 35-7, as Matt Ryan. And he threw it 427 times this year. Matt Ryan threw it 608. So you can sit there and quote all of these stats and everything, but you know you also have to say, hey, you know, maybe we can back the salary cap goes up to what, 191 this year, 191 million, and you know you've got to say, hey, can you be a little bit friendly? And I think it's going to be necessary for quarterbacks going forward to maybe be cap friendly. And maybe take some things that maybe help the team out a little bit, kind of like Tom Brady has done.
Let me ask this question, and I hadn't thought of it until just now. Who's more likely to play hardball? Who's more likely to be the bare knuckles, like, I got to get what's mine? Who's more likely to drive the harder bargain? Is it the Seahawks or is it Russell? I'm not sure the answer. I'm really not sure who's the more likely of the two.
Why? What's the Seahawks side of it?
The Seahawks side of it would be, hey, we're in a position where we can offer you the average of the top five quarterbacks. That we're not going to make you the highest paid, but we're gonna put you in that. We're gonna follow the same formula we used last time we negotiated a contract with you, which was after your third season. And we're not gonna redefine the quarterback market. We're not gonna build a new subdivision. We're gonna put you on the cul-de-sac with all of the rich quarterbacks. You're going to have a house right in that, but we're not starting a new neighborhood. That would be the hardball version for the Seahawks because there's really the Seahawks have never cheaped out. They've never held anyone's feet to the fire, but they've also not redefined the salary scale at a given position. For Russell, the hardball position would be, you know what? My age right now and what I've done, I deserve to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. And by the way, Kirk Cousins got his whole deal guaranteed. I want mine guaranteed too. That would be the hardball position.
I hope the Seahawks don't take a hardball position. I can see, and the one thing is if he plays it out next year, and if they do franchise him, the one thing with Russell Wilson, I always wonder what a player's thinking and how it's going to affect him during the season. I don't think it would affect Russell Wilson in the least. Whether he has a long-term deal, whether he doesn't, whether he gets the expansion, or the, whether he gets, what is it?
The franchise tag.
The franchise tag. Whether he gets that, it's not going to make any impact at all on his game. The thing is, it comes back to me, all these different numbers, run first offense, boy, he's not as prolific as Patrick Mahomes, all these different things, Drew Brees, all these gaudy numbers that other quarterbacks are throwing up there. But come back to the wins. Don't forget about the W's. The play, he's 8-5 in the playoffs now, and then you just look at him overall, the record that he has here. So don't, I just don't want it to get ugly in the negotiations where they're sitting there and trying to nickel dime a little bit on that side of it with the negotiations.
I would hate to see the Seahawks have to go to, well, where are you going to go that you can have this kind of game? Because this is perfectly suited for Russell, in my opinion. They want to run the ball. We saw how much that helped him from last year. I mean, he had a good number as far as touchdowns last year, but you know, it wasn't the most successful year, and he had to do way too much, so you hope it doesn't go there. But you know what? For Russell, I don't ever see him being a hard ass about it. That's what your agent is for. So, you know, like if you're a GM, I mean, I just assume that if you're enemies with the GM, then you're probably doing your job. I hate to say that because I know that my agent, Marvin Demoff, I mean, he was one of those guys that I think would fill you full of holes and you wouldn't know that you were bleeding until he walked away, you know, and he did it the right way where Marvin always got me more money than I thought I deserved. I'll say that much. And you don't hear many players say that. I remember when Flores, when I went to Denver, he's like, oh, that's a lot of money for David. It's like, thanks, Tom. I think so, too.
But so what, were you being complimented? Or
no,
were you not sure?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, but he was right. He was right. So anyway, you know, and I think it was Marvin's negotiation skills, and it was also that Denver was kind of over a barrel. And so, you know, if you have a team over the barrel, you know, you have to be – and, you know, I don't know. Is he the only client
that Mark Rogers' only football
client?
As
okay.
far as I know. And that might have changed. He's a certified agent in football, so he's certainly eligible and he has a lot of experience negotiating big contracts in baseball. It'll be interesting to see. We have answered the question. We are ready to discuss it. We will keep – certainly not the last time we're going to visit that subject. Here is Brady Henderson, Seahawks insider from ESPN.com. For his part, he wouldn't be surprised if nothing gets done.
I would not be surprised if they end up not reaching an agreement on an extension, and if Wilson ends up playing out the final year of his deal. And, you know, just remember how close it got to that happening last time. Remember, his side had set the deadline for the start of training camp to be, you know, that was the deadline where if they didn't have a deal in place by then, Wilson was going to play out the final year of his rookie deal. It went all the way until the eve of that deadline for them to get a deal. And I'll echo a point that Mike Sando made in one of his columns a month or so ago that, you know, it may have made more sense for Wilson to do a deal back then when he had been in the NFL for 3 years. He had only made a little over $2 million in NFL salary at the time. So it made a lot of sense for him to do a deal there just for, you know, basic financial risk reasons. Well, you know, 3 years later, he's made almost $80 million in NFL money. So he's got, you know, more money in the bank to maybe take that risk, whatever risk that may be, and play out the final year of his deal.
The other piece of offseason business, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, not necessarily with Cody Parkey, but kicker. I posted my spoiled milk theory on 710sports.com today.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You laid it all out there? Explained it in detail?
My spoiled milk. Yes, it's as complicated as the second time you have to take a whiff and ask yourself if it's good. It's probably time to change the kicker.
So where's Parkey?
Parkey? I'm not going to consider him because he's still in the grocery store. Like, he's there and he's 3 days past the expiration date. I'm going to find a different gallon of milk that hasn't expired yet.
I think Cody Parkey's in the back of an old refrigerator, very lumpy. And stinky is what he is.
You think he's that far back?
Yes.
He missed 10 kicks.
He missed seven.
Is that more than everybody?
No, he missed seven field goal attempts, and he missed three extra points.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't that the most in the NFL?
Most of any person in the NFL.
Yeah, and then he went on and yucked it up with the Today people.
He did not yuck it up.
Yes,
they yucked it up toward him.
I don't want to rekindle this argument, but I went back and watched the video. It was just as bad as the audio.
Well, I didn't watch a video.
It's not funny, Cody.
I meant to.
It's not funny.
I meant to, and then I was on a hike.
You were way late.
Yeah.
You were way late. How would you fix the kicker? How would you pick the kicker? Because here's the problem. I don't have a solution of how you pick the right kicker, because you can't necessarily fix it by throwing money at it. You can't necessarily fix it. Parkey's actually the best example of this. Parkey was their big budget addition in the offseason. Cody Parkey, the Bears spent the fourth most of any team in the league on their kicker.
I think he got $9 million guaranteed.
Correct, because they went out and they had three different kickers in 2017, and they said, well, we're not going to go through that again. We're going to go get this taken care of. We're going to buy the best kicker we can in free agency. We're going to get this guy from Miami who made 91% of his kicks, and we're going to pay him $15 million over 4 years, guarantee him $9 million of that, and then you watch him go out there and miss seven field goal attempts, three extra point tries in the regular season. And the game, their playoff game, ends on a blocked field goal.
You know what I feel like is going to happen, though, the way things are going? And this is your whole spoiled milk thing. Hauschka was spoiled milk.
Yes.
But then he went to Buffalo and became an all-pro kicker.
Yes, there are downsides to the spoiled milk theory. Namely, you're going to throw out some perfectly good kickers.
Okay, so what if we're sitting here 3 years from now and Cody Parkey is like a two-time all-pro and pro bowler? I mean, it could happen.
It's the price you pay. This is the spoiled milk theory is not perfect. I just don't have a better alternative.
See, I'd take a flyer on Parkey, bring him in. He's just 26 years old. They saw enough in him to give him $9 million guaranteed in a four-year deal. So if Chicago just sends him off packing, I would at least take a look and bring him in here, have a competition with Kick and Fick. And actually, the better idea, I think, is to go down to San Francisco and get Robbie Gould in free agency. 33 of 34 on field goals this year. He only missed one, Danny. So, and he's only 36 years old, so you could bring him in, get a few more years out of him. You would hurt the 49ers in the process of doing that. Or how about drafting a kicker? You think Schneider, I mean, if Schneider drafted a punter, he might be willing to draft a kicker. There's Cole Tracy down at LSU, 29 of 33 with the field goals and 42 for 42 on extra points. You want him?
I went and dissected and looked at the track record of drafting kickers.
The goalposts are wider in college, though.
They are. And also, you look at it, drafting a kicker is no guaranteed solution either. The most recent, there's been one kicker in the past 10 years that's been drafted in the first three rounds. Just one. And it's Roberto Aguayo. And he missed a total of 11 kicks in his one and only season where he was actually allowed to make kicks in the NFL in 2016. So drafting a guy high doesn't necessarily... He was the third most accurate kicker in the history of college football, the most accurate in the history of the ACC at Florida State, and he stunk. He absolutely is terrible. He's a bad kicker.
That's one example.
Yeah, that's a pretty good example.
There's examples of guys who've had good careers, though, like Janikowski had a good career.
Yeah, after a rocky first season. I guess I would say this. Going and drafting the best college kicker is not a guarantee that that kicker is going to work out. But so your approach would be draft a kicker. If you were... You're assigned.
Problem there is with only four draft picks.
You're assigned to fix the kicker. What
number
are you
one,
doing?
Number one, I go to San Francisco and I offer whatever Robbie Gould wants, and I don't lowball him like I did Hauschka. I mean, I don't know if they lowballed Hauschka, but they certainly. The thing about a kicker, you got to pay these kickers more than what you're paying them.
But that's what they did with Parkey. How'd that work out?
It didn't work out very well, but I just, what I'm getting at is how valuable they are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, this whole business, whether they're football players or not, I don't even care about that. I think they are, but they're one of the most valuable pieces on the team.
Yes, they are.
And yet I feel like salary-wise that they're not.
Well, it's because the difference, and salary is about predictability. If you knew that the guy was going to be that good, you would pay him way more money than other kickers. But Parkey's the perfect example that paying the guy to be that sure thing doesn't necessarily make him
the sure
thing.
What's your solution then?
I bring in three different kickers. Ficken can be the first. I get three in training camp. In the first week of training camp, I line them all up there and I have them attempt kicks. We have Tuesday is the kick competition day, and only the best guy stays. And the next week, I bring in two more guys to compete with the guy that won last week's. The best guy stays. And the week after that, I bring in two more guys. Maybe I'll recycle one of the guys from the first 2 weeks. And whoever's the last man standing at the end of the competition gets the job until he stinks, and then I'll have another competition.
I think you put three names in a hat of guys that were fired and just pull one out.
It's as good a chance of succeeding as anything else.
Hey, you know what? Maybe this is good news for kickers. Maybe if, you know, the way things went this year. Now, is this an anomaly? Was it this bad last year?
Was it that bad? I don't think there was someone like Parkey that. But teams, when team doesn't have a kicker, they stumble around like the Chargers did it for years.
Right. So I mean, and people keep texting in. Yeah, it was blocked. It was blocked. But you know, you got to kick it higher.
Yeah, it was a 43 yard attempt.
I mean, sorry,
It was a 43 yard attempt. He should have been able to get it over the line.
I've got another solution. It's out of the box. You want to hear it? I think Mike Leach might like the solution.
If it involves the Australian drop kicking.
No, you don't have a kicker at all. You just don't have. I told you it was out of the box. Come on.
I'm not entirely against
this. Play along here. So you get in field goal range, and you just go, well, the hell with it. We don't have a kicker, so we're not going to go for it. It's 4th and 8. We're going to go for it. Leach does this all the time. We have two kickers, and he basically doesn't really like going for field goals very often. And so... It'd be kind of cool, though, wouldn't it, if you could just chart and monitor a season, a full season of this, where a team didn't have a kicker, and see how many points it cost you or how many points you actually gained. And you go for 2 points instead of going for one every time after, and you miss the extra point every once in a while now in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't think that would be the difference.
It would be an interesting experiment, though, because the times that you didn't make it on fourth down when you're in field goal range, you weigh that against the times that you do make it and go and score 6 or 8 points versus the 3 that you were trying to get with a field goal.
I was intrigued about that right up until I thought about facing 3rd and 16 mm-hmm. in the third quarter from about the 32 and saying, oh, we're going to go for it instead of kicking the 48 49-yard field goal that will give us the sure thing 3 points.
Well, there's all these new seamhead things going on in football, so I just decided to throw that out there, and maybe somebody could work some magic and look at the numbers on that.
It's Danny David Morris.
You don't like it, though.
It's time for us to take two.
Take two! The Seahawks did make a move today. They signed defensive tackle Jamie Meter, whose nickname is the Pierogi Prince of Parma.
The Pierogi Prince of Parma?
This guy can play the run. I'll say that. I spent a better part of a half an hour watching some of his plays. And you know who he reminds me of? He reminds me, if you watch the UW defense, Greg Gaines. Yeah, he just plants himself in the middle, and he's on a four-point stance, and he's not in on, you know, second and long or third and long, but he's a really good run stuffer. And I don't know if they're two-gapping him, which means you line up head up on a guy and control both sides of that player, because there's a gap on either side, but it looks like that's what he's able to do. He's strong, man. He's a big dude, and but, you know, he's not really a runner.
He's not going to get downfield?
I don't think you're going to see him, you know, tackling a guy from, you know, maybe. I mean, he's a hustler, I'll say that, but it doesn't look like, you know, he can run that much. I see sometimes his base gets a little bit narrow, but other than that, I mean, He's a guy that just, he's got great technique, he gets under people, and he's just strong.
He didn't play this year, which I was surprised to see.
Yeah, there was an ankle injury, I think.
I think it was like week 4 or 5 he got hurt, went on IR.
Yeah, why not, though? Bring him in, and let's see if he can, he's only 27, so he could give you some help. You got Puna Ford, Jaron Reed, and Quentin Jefferson there as defensive tackle. Shamar Stephen is a free agent, and they're moving Nas Jones to defensive end, so get another body in there.
You can always use more guys.
Bellevue native Caitlin Ohashi scored a perfect 10 for her Michael Jackson-inspired floor routine in gymnastics for UCLA.
It's a viral clip. I watched it and was thoroughly entertained.
She's doing double backflips.
It was awesome.
And then she did like 3 flips in a row. And then she did something where she went down and like landed on her rear end and then popped right back up. I haven't watched a floor routine in a long time. She's doing amazing things that I've never seen before.
Yeah, landed doing splits and then popping right back up. So,
and dancing.
I liked the dancing.
That was an extremely entertaining floor routine.
And I've always wondered, why has gymnastics not incorporated any of that? Figure skating does. I've developed an appreciation for figure skating, in large part because it's... might be my wife's favorite sport. Like, she really enjoys figure skating during the Winter Olympics. And I've grown to like the music and the choreographed routines.
That's funny. I don't like the dancing.
Really?
I like the spinning and the flipping.
Oh, you like the axles.
That's amazing.
How about a triple sow cow?
Well, I'm talking about more in gymnastics.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, I mean, I like seeing the... That's got to be hard to do, right? How do you control your body in midair?
I'm partial to the flying camel.
No kidding.
Yeah. I like watching figure skating, too. I remember a long time ago, Rosalind Sumners from Edmonds. I mean, she was over there in the Olympics. And so, yeah, I think it's fun to watch figure skating. And this, the gymnast here, I think her family lives in Newcastle now. And, yeah, she 78 pounds.
It's awesome. From UCLA, congratulations to her. That was absolutely fantastic. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. Coming up next, Kyler Murray's got a decision to make. And there's one Hall of Famer who thinks he should choose the sport that Deion Sanders didn't play. We'll hear it next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Kyler Murray's he's going to be a millionaire either way, so this isn't hard decisions. This is an exciting decision. He's got a $4.7 million signing bonus that he's already been paid by the Oakland A's to play baseball if he chooses that route, or he can decide to pay that back because he wants to enter the NFL draft, which he's already said he's going to enter the draft. If he signs with the team, would then take their deal. It's an interesting decision that he'll have to make. Russell Wilson, who's one of the only people who, probably one of the best resources, someone who did play professional baseball, who is a starting quarterback in the NFL, he was on with Dan Patrick, and he talked about sort of that two-sport experience.
I think also, too, is he may have to play it out. He may have to, you know, try to do both. I always dreamed of playing both and everything else. And, you know, playing the quarterback position, if you really want to be great, take a lot of time and a lot of energy and study and film and everything else. And but, you know, he's capable of anything.
Another two-sport athlete, Deion Sanders, had a different opinion.
If I was in his shoes, I'm picking up the baseball bat, and I'm not looking back.
Why?
Because that's just for me. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I still have regret that I didn't give it more. But, you know, I got a gold jacket in the closet. I'm straight. You know, but I wish I would have given it more.
That's interesting to hear him say that. He's such a good football player, and he was an okay Major League Baseball player, but he wasn't an all-star.
Yeah, he struck me as being a better football player than baseball.
Oh, yeah. By far, wasn't he?
And I thought so.
He was good in baseball, but he's great in football.
Yeah, I mean, he was so good. I tell you my Deion Sanders story.
No.
He picked off Dave Craig. So I was standing down on the, kind of like we were talking about the kickoff the other day, and I don't know if he picked it off or somebody else picked it off and lateraled it to him, and then he had another interception. But he went running past me. You ever see like a deer, like when it's in full flight and will just hop like easily over a 6-foot fence? That's what it looked like when he went running past me. And then by the time he got to where I was down on like the opposing 30. He had the hand behind the head, you know, doing the little dance thing, and he was still flying. And then I look behind him, and there's Dave Craig actually trying to catch him. I'm like, Dave, stop. Give up. But, you know, there was like a spot about the size of a quarter on the bottom of his foot that touched the ground. He's just incredibly athletic. He couldn't tackle. He never would. But, you know, I don't know what kind of a baseball player. I feel like I had a better grasp on how good Bo Jackson was. But the second that Kyler Murray, if he tries to do both, which I would love to see him do both, but the second that he threw an interception or made any kind of a mistake, somebody would say, you're putting too much time into baseball. That's why he can't play baseball.
It would be
and football.
If you had to make that decision, would you make it practically or would you make it emotionally? And I guess I would say that. Would you follow your interest or your love? Or would you sit down with a pen and paper and, like, what were you most likely to make the most money at? How would you make that decision?
Well, I just don't think you can be great and happy if you're not doing what you really want to do and what you're passionate about. You know, and that's the thing, you know, sometimes people go into things for the wrong reason, you know? It's like when I was working at Merrill Lynch, you know, you're a financial advisor. Your job is to give people security and to help them plan for their future. And if you go in it thinking, I'm going to make a lot of money in this business, that's the wrong reason. So, and maybe that sounds hokey to people, but it's true. And you can ask any old man, you know, that or woman that's had a career that, you know, this is something that it's not like work to me. It's more fun. I mean, what if he chose football, but it was like work for him? And whereas you go to, because to me, every day was like being out on a playground. Sometimes there's pressure, stuff like that. But no, you got to make it. Now you say emotionally, and that makes it sound like it's, you know, haphazard that you got to control your emotions. But in the way of like, what do you truly love? That's an emotion. Then that's the one you have to choose.
Yeah, the tough one though is, so what if you love football? What if you're Kyler Murray and you're laying there in bed at night and you're thinking, okay, I'm gonna play football. I want to be in the NFL. I want to be the first guy that's, you know, 5'9". I saw somebody said that they had the actual measurement, 5'9" and 7/8 inches or whatever. But what if they're telling you in baseball that you have a better chance of a better career, that you're actually you project as a better baseball player? Like, what does the difference have to be there? Like, your passion isn't really there for baseball like it is football, and yet you've got people telling you that, hey, we think you're a great quarterback, but you can be an even better baseball player. That would make it more difficult.
It would. How would you decide that? Did you ever take aptitude tests when in grade school? Because they give them to you to decide what you're, and the whole idea is this is what you're suited to do. This is what your natural sort of quote-unquote talents lend you toward.
I probably took one, but I knew when I went to WSU, I either wanted to be a sports writer, a veterinarian, or a PE teacher and coach. Those were the three things that I wanted to do. And Dave, you know, it struck home with me when you were talking about, you know, a career choice. I never regretted being a sports writer. I never did. And it was like, okay, but I never got rich at it either. I mean, I think the most I made was like 70 or 75, you know, and I started out at, boy, my first job in Ketchikan, Alaska, I was making $215 a week and whatever that goes out to for a year. But I never even, yeah, did I wish I made more money? Yeah, I did, but I never thought, gee, I want to get dressed up every day and be a PR guy and make $150,000 and drive into downtown Seattle. It never occurred to me to want to do that because I was having so much fun being a sports writer.
Yeah, I always felt like I could sell. You know, and that you see these guys like at Merrill Lynch that were making like $1 million a year being a financial advisor, and they just had all of these, you know, clients and everything. And, you know, I felt like I was articulate enough, smart enough and everything, but I just didn't, it wasn't passionate about it. I just didn't want to do it. This is like coming to, you know, to play every day.
Us here?
Yeah, we just screw around, basically, right? I mean, it's not even a job.
This is an emotional decision that you made to want to come and do this radio show? You really love it?
I do like it. I had a chance, you know, early on to get into the NFL. And, you know, and look, I'm not trying to tell you that I could have got in and, you know, been a GM or whatever. But in 2002 or whatever, if I'd have started off being a scout, I had a couple of chances to possibly do that. You know, and I probably would have loved that, too. But, you know, it was going to be time away from my family. I think I'd have one of those deals where when the kids went out the door for college, I would feel a lot of regret that I wasn't there. And I never had any of those feelings because this job allowed me to be able to do that. So, yeah, I'm with you, Jim. I don't ever sit there and go, man, I wish I would have done this. I'd be making this much money or anything. No, it's just you have to do what it is that that really lights you up. And then the money will come. You know, and I figure if he chooses the right one, if he were to do it based on money and, you know, logic, then that would be the wrong one, and he's not going to be nearly as happy.
I would agree with you. I think that he's got to make this decision. If I was going to give him advice, it would be this, that you've got two opportunities that most people would kill to have just one of them. For most people, either one of these things that you're getting would be what they've dreamed of their entire life, and they can't believe it's come true. And you've got to pick between these two things. Do the one that you like the most. Not the one that you think you'll be the biggest star at, but the one where you sit down and think, what do I want out of this career? What do I want to do? The one that you like the most. Because that's the only way that you're not going to end up feeling that, oh my gosh, did I make the right decision? Because at least you'll be like, I pursued what I wanted to do. Rather than making some... It's such an interesting... Because you hear that the A's are going to offer him more money now... And
what do you want him to do? Like if he asked you, hey, what do you think I should do, Danny O'Neill? Because for me, I want to see him play baseball. And it's only because I'm torn on it a little bit because being a Mariner fan, how good will he be for the Oakland A's? But on the other side of it, I think it'd be fun to see him at T-Mobile Park out there, Kyler Murray.
See, I want him to choose football because I think if he chooses football, the Cardinals are going to draft him, pair him with Cliff Kingsbury, and I think that's going to be an absolute disaster.
That's not very nice.
No, it's
terrible. You're not a very good mentor.
You're wishing ill will on it?
If you asked me in a therapist or a counselor's role, I would tell him, like, choose what your passion is and what you want to do.
Don't you think this, though? If everything was 50-50 and you were advising him, I would say, go try football first. And I feel like you're going to get weeded out much quicker in the NFL than you are in the MLB because, you know, there's no minor league or anything in the NFL. You don't really have anywhere to develop. And so let's say you play in the NFL for 2-3 years, then what is he, 25?
Yeah, well, he's 20. He's turning 21 right now.
Okay, so let's say 2 years later. I mean, he's still a very young man. I came out of college at 23. So I feel like if the NFL will – spit you out quicker than Major League Baseball.
That part's definitely true. It'll be interesting. I'm not sure if he's got time to be able to do that, but we'll be watching to see exactly what Kyler Wilson chooses to do.
Kyler Murray.
Yeah, Kyler Murray. Russell Wilson.
Sorry, Danny.
Coming up next, we've got 7 new coaches in the NFL with an 8th on the way. Who's guaranteed to be the biggest bust? We'll tell you next.
This is Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
We've got a Kitchens. We've got, who else? A Kingsbury. The NFL coaching carousel. We don't have all of the vacancies filled yet. We're still waiting on the Miami Dolphins. We also got a guy with googly eyes, Adam Gase.
Can you explain that?
Adam Gase and his eyes.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
It was exceptionally strange. He did a press conference in which it appeared he had googly eyes. Googly eyes were the highly technical term for the little puffed up things with the eyes that'll, like Cookie Monster has googly eyes.
Yeah, well, it looked like his eyeballs were going to come out of his face is what it looked like.
Did you feel like he was a hostage? That was my initial thought, that he might have been there, held there against his will.
Some guy wrote that it looked like he had just woken up from a 30-year coma.
Yeah, I could see being alarmed. That might explain it.
Yeah.
How about a bad hangover?
Yeah, no, that's you just want to like lay down and go to sleep, right? You look more cadaverous.
Mm.
Eyes are not that wide open on a hangover.
Yeah, but you got to
force another
them
drug.
Open.
Yeah, that's true. That's
what do you
true.
Think was going on there? The 360 thinks he was high.
Thinks that he was high. You know yeah. who else thinks he was high? Stephen A. Smith.
If that were a player, we'd either be asking for some tests to be taking place, or y'all would ask me to say, stay off the weed.
I know nothing.
I'm not accusing him of anything.
I thought you would like the I know nothing part repeated. In case anybody wondered about that.
Sergeant Schultz from
Hogan's Heroes?
Hogan's Heroes.
I believe there's a couple different things that I love about this. The first is stay off the weed, drawn out. Then is an actual discussion of whether or not his eyes were under, as if he were on weed, which people are pointing out that actually physiologically, that's correct. It's not correct.
It's if you haven't seen it though, I saw it for the first time today. Well, actually, I saw the meme with the tacos or the taco thing that he was following around. But it's eerie. It's spooky. It's strange.
Would you be
if he were my coach right now? I would just based on what he did with his eyes, I'd be concerned about him.
Would you fire him?
I wouldn't fire him, but I'd be.
Would you be worried?
Yeah, I would be.
Send him to an ophthalmologist.
That wasn't normal.
No. It was not normal. In fact, everybody, Mike Francesa, who is he's the highest paid talk radio host, he really couldn't explain it.
I don't know if you noticed it today, but what was going on with Gase's eyes? I never noticed that before.
He still didn't.
His eyes, there's something with his eyes. I don't know exactly what it is. Did you see how his eyes, something with his eyes?
Well, maybe it was the lighting. Or
I don't know what it was, but I never noticed that on the sideline before.
You know what it looked like? You know those goofy glasses that have like slinkies?
Yes!
To them, and then the eyeballs kind of pop forward? That's what it looked like.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, the biggest shame in that whole thing is that they had their stupid rookie quarterback sit in on the interview. That's the thing. You know what they need to do in the NFL? They need to bring back rookie hazing.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
Send the guys down the hallway and hit them with socks full of quarters.
No.
Go into the room with a fire extinguisher like they did it when Chuck Knox finally put the end to it. No, but Baker Mayfield with all of his comments and he's sitting there calling out and staring down a guy that's been a coaching veteran in the NFL for, what, 30 years? And then Sam Darnold was, yes, I was very impressed in the interview. They had him sit in the interview. I'm like, man, I feel sorry for Adam Gase. Like, you're a head coach, and yet you had to go through the process of making sure that you please the stupid rookie quarterback who doesn't know, as Mark Schlereth would say, hasn't squirted a drop of pee in the NFL bucket yet. And, yeah, that to me is the bigger. That's probably why his eyes are popping out of his head. He's like, God, I can't believe I got to sit through an interview with a stupid-ass rookie who just, you know, got his nose wet this last year, barely. You got to be kidding me.
Can I ask a question? If you were being interviewed for a head coaching job, they called and said, Dave, we'd like to talk to you about our head coaching position, and you're called into the interview, and a rookie, and Josh Rosen is sitting there in the interview. What would you do?
I would just kind of stand up and go, Josh, the adults are going to talk now. So if you can just go sit outside, that'd be great.
It is funny. The idea that you would have a player's input on what coach he wants, it's an interesting, I don't want to say it's wrong because I could see how it would work and that you would.
Well, what happens if you're the coach? Because so you have Sam Darnold endorsing you, but what if Darnold struggles next year? Are you less likely to move away from him because he endorsed you as
the
coach?
Yeah, that's kind of the question. Here's what I would wonder, though. If I was the owner, and I'm not sure what my answer, you want to hire the person who's going to get the best out of that player, not the person the player is going to like the best. you want the guy who's, and that might involve making that player uncomfortable. So that kind of question about,
Then the point you're making is that he doesn't know. Sam Darnold doesn't know. He doesn't know what it takes to be a head coach in the NFL. I'm sorry, you have maybe a Aaron Rodgers in there, which still I would say you're out of your lane. Because, and that's what Cortez Kennedy used to always say, owner's own, coach's coach, players play. You know, it's kind of a stay in your lane. You can't have a player with his input. What's he going to disagree with you on a call or something like that? I mean, I don't understand why you would sort of enable a young player who doesn't really know anything. And I guarantee you that Sam Darnold in his 10th year, if he's lucky to play that long, will look back about how stupid he was as a rookie. Not stupid, but I'm just saying uninformed, inexperienced. And
he's got a lot to learn in the league. There's no doubt about that. Of all these coaching hires, which one are you, and it might not even be about the coach himself, but the situation that he's walking into, which of these situations do you think is most doomed?
It's hard to tell because, like, Cliff Kingsbury, I always want to call him Cliffsbury. Is it Cliff? Is it spelled K?
Cliff.
It's Cliff and then Kingsbury. I always want to call him Klingsbury for some reason.
Wait, wasn't there a Kling something? Klingler. David Klingler is a quarterback.
That's correct. Yeah, that's at the University of Houston.
Yeah, maybe the guy comes in and lights it up. Maybe it's exactly what they need. You don't know. They're trying. You know, that it seemed like a good hire last year when they hired Steve Wilkes, who was a defensive coordinator. But, you know, you just have to be in that room and know exactly, you know, what the guy's about. From what I understand, McVay, which it was always weird to me, like, what's with this McVay guy? But if you go back and look at, like, Kirk Cousins' numbers and what he did with him in Washington, but does that mean he can be a head coach? I don't know. We'll see. But obviously it's working. So, you know, everybody's taking a shot. And, you know, maybe they're thinking, well, the kids these days are responding better to, you know, some of these 30-something-year-old coaches that are offensive gurus.
Who do you think is going to be the worst of these?
Well, I think it's going to be Kingsbury. Yeah.
Klingler.
Just because you have a good relationship with a quarterback, I mean, it seems to me that that's okay. You're going to get everything out of Josh Rosen. I just go back to his Texas Tech record, and it's not just the overall record. It's the record in the Big 12. The guy was a loser. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't care if he's good-looking and, you know, he's going to look great on the sideline or whatever. It just didn't make sense to me. I wouldn't, even if I were an Arizona fan, I wouldn't be excited about that.
We got the professor. We'll ask him which of these is doomed to fail. That's coming up next.